Well, we are 3 days into it, 16 games. We've got already an elimination game tonight with the New York Rangers down 2-0 to Carolina. We've got the other three series all 1-1, continuation of the other four series today. And, of course, the round-robin games continue as well. They kind of run in conjunction. So lots of hockey going on. Six more games today to talk about what we saw on the weekend and look ahead. We welcome former Dallas head coach Jim Montgomery, official friend of the show, joining us here on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. How are you doing this morning, Jim?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Good to have friends.
Yeah, friends in low places. Absolutely. How much hockey did you watch on the weekend?
I've watched quite a bit. Just the late games are the only ones that I'm not staying up for.
Monty, did it end up being more than you expected, or was it just kind of a, hey, I want to get in and kind of do a cross-section of the entire, just see what it looks like?
Simmer, you mean the games I've been watching?
Well, no, but overall, like when you first went into this, did you really think, you know what, I'm going to watch every single game, or was it just kind of a wait and see that I'm going to tune in and then see how interested I am to watch it?
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest, I didn't really watch much. After I was let go, I didn't really watch much hockey. I had more important things to do, but also just didn't have much interest. But with this long layoff and this starting up again, I've wanted to watch every game. I'm just got the juices flowing, watching, seeing what teams are doing, seeing what coaches are doing, and then not being able to watch. I watch a period of the last game that starts, and then I usually go to bed.
So you would have had a chance to see all or some of the 24 teams. You mentioned you watch it with a discerning eye as a coach in the league. Who, in terms of players or what teams are doing, what have you kind of twigged onto already that's either surprised you or you're pleasantly surprised by?
Well, the biggest thing I've noticed is the play-in games, the teams that are trying to qualify for the what we all know is the true Stanley Cup playoff format, are playing with much more urgency than the round-robin games are. I do not think Boston, St. Louis, even the Washington-Tampa game yesterday, it looked like a January game. It didn't look like what you're seeing, the emotion and urgency you saw from. I was very impressed with game one of Minivan. I thought Van played well. I just thought Mini was just on it. They were playing to... You know, I think Dean Evason's done a great job getting that team to own what he thinks their identity should be. I also, teams that are playing with emotion identity are having the most success. The Islanders, Mini, Carolina, Columbus. And I've noticed a lot of penalties, more so than what we're used to in the playoffs. And I just think that's players and refs aren't in game and regular season form. You know, sticks are very careless sticks a lot. You see a lot of high sticking, a lot of reaching in at the body and hands, and then a lot of needless trips because of poor angles by players. And then, you know, the coach's perspective, or to your point about the players that have been really impactful, to me, you know, having been in the West, I haven't been able to watch and discern the East as much. And, you know, Werenski and Jones, to me, are by far the most dominant pairing in hockey. I thought the Leafs played a good game, but I thought those guys were really able to shut down and negate a lot of quality opportunities by some really incredibly talented forwards on the Leafs side. And by no means do I think that series is going long. And then just McDavid's response yesterday, you know, I don't think he was happy with his team or his own performance probably in game one. And boy, you see the superstar qualities come out.
If you're sitting there, Monty, and you're the big four and you're kind of going through the motions, I know it's going to be best of seven, but are you nervous how you're prepping for the first round of the playoffs versus the teams that are playing the real play-in games?
Absolutely. I, you know, as from a coach, you know, you always want your team to be on top of their game. And, like, if I'm St. Louis, you know, like, Chief, to me, did an incredible job all last year and his staff. And, you know, they came out that first game against Chicago. It didn't look like they wanted anything to do with that exhibition game. And, you know, they were better against the Avs. And the Avs, to me, are not taking that approach. I think MacKinnon and Bednar have done a great job preparing. And just MacKinnon's quotes about how he thinks they're ready. This is the best team. He's giving confidence. And the way he's playing, obviously, he's giving confidence to everybody around him. And then, you know, St. Louis and Boston in particular look like they have the veteran leadership. They know how to get it done. And I think that they're just continuing looking to amp up. Because, you know, whether you finish first or third or fourth in that round robin section, in the East, you're going to get a really good team. In the West, I don't think the West is as deep as the East. And I think it's more important in the West. The higher up you finish, the better you might be having easier success in that first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Former Dallas coach Jim Montgomery is our guest. All you're going to get, because if you do get home ice, is last change. Is that a big deal at the end of the day?
You know, if your staff and as a team, you care more about playing to your identity and with emotion, it's not as big of a deal. And especially in this environment, it's not as big of a deal. I think we see it a little bit. You guys were talking about it. And the word that comes to mind to me is it's sterile. The interviews are sterile. The lack of seeing crowd is sterile. And just the, you know, it's great you hear a lot of people calling for pucks and helping each other out. But it just resonates how sterile the buildings are without what we're all used to and the passion and emotion that comes with that in playoff hockey.
For the crazy noise that you normally see in a playoff, either home or the road, Monty, is it easier to manage a bench in this environment as a coach to actually communicate and now the players can't pretend they can't hear what you're saying?
By far. And if you're a loud coach behind the bench, you know, it really, no player has an excuse to hide somewhere with what you just said.
We saw Montreal get too many men on the ice penalties. How do you explain that?
You know, I just think that that's, you know, again, getting back to game form. And you see it, I think if you look at the regular season, most too many men happen in those first 5 to 10 games than they do later on. And I've seen it not only in Montreal, but I've seen it a lot. Like Winnipeg had one yesterday, and there's been more than you would expect. But again, line changes and when to change at the proper time. There's a lot of things that, as simple as it is, there's a lot of things that need to be ironed out. And players not being in game shape or as being as sharp as they need to be, and coaches themselves, you know, maybe having a line ready when someone is changes quickly for whatever reason. A lot of guys are, like when I was in Dallas and Cogliano came to our team, I mean, what a great pro he is and loved coaching him, but he is a 28-second shift guy. And if you don't know that, it catches you by surprise sometimes, especially when you're on the road and you're trying to wait as long as possible. I mean at home, not on the road. You're waiting as long as possible to see who the other team might be coming with if you're matching.
And to that, when you watch Montreal, I think they had the problem during the regular season. They also had practices in whatever phase to get ready. I'm watching their bench and watching Pittsburgh, Monty, and I know it's a trend. Is four coaches an awful lot to have on a bench as far as trying to, I guess, keep everybody busy, but at the same time communicate between everyone?
You know, I think that really comes down to the head coach's comfort level. You know, does he want a lot of feedback? Is he someone that paces a lot behind? Because once you get four guys there, there's not as much room to walk back and forth. I liked having more people behind there because I liked a lot of information coming to me. You know, but it just depends on the individual.
With Jim Montgomery, former NHL coach, you talked about Connor McDavid. How do you defend against that guy?
You got to get him in the offensive zone. You know, if you, like when we would play against Connor McDavid, we would try on the forecheck. It would be two guys going hard at their D and the third guy picking up Connor. We'd leave the walls open because You know, once he gets it, same thing with McKinnon. Once those guys, they come down low to their own goal line, they get that, they get two steps. They get half a step. It's too many steps. So you got to be in on them before they get going, or else, you know, your defenseman, like, you can look at Olimata and say he got burned, but, I mean, who's going to stop that yesterday?
Yeah, no, I look at that. And to your point, is it really at the end of the day through the neutral zone? There's no way it's going to be the defenseman. I mean, the forward has to turn and come with him. Otherwise, forget it.
Yeah, he's got to at least deflect him to the boards out of the middle of the ice so that the defenseman can get a good gap and proper angle and only give him one opportunity. But if he gets the middle of the ice, just like any, the same thing with Sidney Crosby. He gets the middle of the ice on you, you're in trouble.
You talked a little bit about that defense pair for Columbus that shut down the Leafs in Game 1. That relies a bit upon your ability to line match. If you're Sheldon Keefe and the Toronto Maple Leafs, do you try to get Austin Matthews while you have last change for tonight's game or today's game? Do you try to get him away, or do you just say, hey, Austin Matthews is going to play his 22, 23, 24 minutes, and I've got Tavares in the number two hole. I'm comfortable just playing those guys, just making sure they get enough minutes.
Well, you know, you can do all you want. There's only so many handful of times as a coach, even if you have home ice, it's just off changes. Can you make that happen? And if you're not winning faceoffs, you know, as soon as Columbus gets the puck across their own blue line, those two D-men are changing, and they're getting their matchup anyways. So you got to get that same response that McDavid had. You know, the Leafs' best forwards got to find a way. And, you know, Columbus did a great job of clogging up the middle of the ice. Now the Leafs have to refuse to be denied getting to those tough areas.
When you look at the matchups as well, Monty, for a player, first of all, attention to detail also takes a lot of players out of their rhythm. Does a modern-day NHL player, can he do that old school, or do a lot of them just want to get out on the ice when it's their designated time? And as JR pointed out, hey, whatever the matchup is, I just want to get into a rhythm.
Yeah, rhythm is important. And your best players, you know, when they start feeling it, and that comes with a lot of reps, you know, they get in a rhythm of the game. I think you see that with Columbus, you know, with Aho, who is just so good, and Svechnikov. They got two dynamic young forwards that, as a coach, you look at them, you're, God, they play the game the right way. They're hard back, they're hard on the forecheck, they're relentless on the puck, and then they have the ability to make special plays. And once they get in a rhythm like you did yesterday, they can take over games.
With former coach Jim Montgomery, speaking of getting in rhythm, it was obvious that Mike Sullivan wanted to do that last night for Pittsburgh, because Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, essentially, he just kept rolling those guys out there early in the game in an effort to get that first goal and kind of get over that Carey Price bump. Do you believe that Carey Price in any way was in Pittsburgh's head after one game?
No, I don't. I think Pittsburgh is such a veteran, confident team, and, you know, Sully's a great coach, and I think they just believe that they weren't gritty enough, that they weren't getting the dirty areas enough, and I'm not sure. I only saw a period last night, so I don't know if they did that significantly that much better of a job. I think what Pittsburgh's biggest concern is going to be not letting the power play become a distraction for their 5-on-5 play, because the carryover from your best players, who are usually your best offensive players, not getting frustrated with the lack of success on the power play carrying over to their effectiveness 5-on-5.
How good has Carolina been, and not just this year, but last year? How much respect do you have for them and Coach Rob Brind'Amour?
Immense. I mean, that team is so hard to play against. Columbus did the same thing. Columbus played a perfect game against Toronto, checking-wise. And Carolina, I thought that was a hard matchup. And when I look at, you know, what could David Quinn have done different? Like, I think David Quinn's coached a great series. I love this post-game press conference after Game 1. I thought he tried to switch up his top two lines at the, you know, right time yesterday. He called a timeout at the right time when it went 3-1. You just look at it, 5-on-5. The Rangers are getting a great experience here playing in the playoffs with a real young team that's going to be reckoned with in the future. You just got a Carolina team that has the most mobile decor, and they're missing Pesci and Hamilton, so look out when they come back supposedly for round two. And then you have Rod Brind'Amour, who I think his players love playing for. that gets his players to play on their toes, and they put other teams on their heels. And I think you're seeing that. 5-on-5, they've been incredibly dominant.
I wanted to ask you about a couple of players from your former team, the Dallas Stars. Tyler Seguin and Jason Dickinson, both before the game with Vegas yesterday, took a knee during the anthem. Are you surprised at all with those two players in particular that they did what they did yesterday?
No, I'm not. They are both, very caring and sensitive people. And what I mean by sensitive is, Tyler is a person that really tries to include everyone. He would hate it if he knew anyone in the world was unhappy with him as a person. And I think he's just a very giving person. And Jason Dickinson's the same way, but different. No one knows his brand like they do Tyler's. But he's a person that is very sensitive and cares a lot about doing the right thing, and I applaud both of them for what they did.
As far as watching the hockey itself, do you like the presentation? Have you been a little surprised, I guess, three games on the same sheet ice, how that's kind of held up? And I guess just overall quality of the play?
Yeah, I think that, the play has been, some teams have been incredible. Some teams, I think, are still trying to find their way. I think the quality of the ice has been good considering how much hockey is on it, but you do see a lot of bouncing pucks. You don't see a lot of flat pucks, and that's to be expected. And I think everybody's dealing with the same ice, so they have to move past that ordeal.
All right, good stuff. Six games today. How many are we marking you down for?
Four. I got to take the boys out, hit some golf balls, or do something with them. I got to be a dad at some point, or else I think I'm going to get thrown out of home.
We hear you. We hear you. You're no different than anybody else. Listen, great insight, as always. Really appreciate the time and look forward to chatting with you again down the road.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.